Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Have a lot to share on health. What's wrong with the meat and the chicken in your supermarket? How about how it's right to eat fruits and vegetables for a specific condition? Sweet or sour? Why are kids losing their sense of taste? Diet can bring relief to a major disease. Older people suffer from cluttered memory. What does that mean? How can we help them? And a lot more on health and healing, including cancer prevention, lifestyle reduces death from all causes over a 14-year period. So we have the latest and the most important information on health, healing, and reversing the aging process. Today, we're also going to do two aspects of environment. We're going to look at the severe drought covering 99.8% of California. This is the latest report. I'll give you in-depth information on this and what it means. This is from the state's Water Resources Control Board. It doesn't look good living in California in the foreseeable future. But it does look good if you're interested in using solar power, but you couldn't afford all the panels. They've got a new way of spraying on solar power. Spray it on your house. You bet. Latest science on that. From social issues today, commentary from Professor Henry Giroux from Truth Out. Worse than the 1930s, the truth about the recession is really a depression in Europe. And I'm going to give some insights of what I believe could help those in Europe and in the United States. From Glenn Ford from Black Agenda Report, Ferguson versus the counterinsurgency state. And also from the Ukraine, we have been led to believe that this is a crisis caused by Russia. That is not true. In fact, the Ukraine crisis was caused by the West, and it's not Putin's fault. Who says that? The Council on Foreign Relations in their magazine. An interesting discussion. I'll share the latest on why we should abolish NATO. My guest in the second part of our program, Dr. Brian Hooker, professor of biology at Simpson's University in California. He is going to be sharing insights with us about the CDC's cover-up of the MMR vaccine and the autism link. And I might mention that this is absolutely unique because it tells us something about the African-American community. If you're African-American and if you get the MMR vaccine before a certain age of 36 months, you have an astronomical increased potential for autism. The CDC knew this and with malice aforethought and intention, covered it up. But a whistleblower still working at the CDC has shared information with Dr. Brian Hooker. We will be talking with Dr. Hooker, and also I might mention Dr. Hooker, as a bioengineer, spent 16 years as a team leader at the Department of Energy's Genome to Life Center for Molecular and Cellular Systems at the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, where he investigated gene-protein networks and cell signaling and cellular metabolic pathways. So he's an outstanding scientist. And why he was given this information, we'll find out, because I'm not aware of anyone else that has this. This is a big deal. It is my understanding that there's going to be more coming out, but this could be the single biggest whistleblower case in American history. We'll find out more about that. So you want to tell people right now that you're going to listen to a historic show today on this program. Let's begin. We have a lot to share. I don't think I'll have time today. I'm pretty sure I won't. But I do have two major reports debunking the myth of the DTP vaccine with Christina England, and the cancer industry is too prosperous to allow a cure from Health Impact News, fully documented. I reviewed both of these comments, and they are accurate, but they take more time, so probably on an upcoming show. Most Americans buy their meat in supermarkets. They assume that the supermarket has some form of health standard or the meat packing company so that there's little to no chance that they could get sick. This is the Associated Press from Atlanta. Quote, half the meat and poultry sold in the supermarket may be tainted with a staph germ. The new estimate is based upon samplings of beef, chicken, pork, and turkey purchased from grocery stores in Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., Flagstaff, Arizona, and Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Proper cooking kills the germs, and federal health officials estimate staph accounts for less than 3% of foodborne illnesses, far less than more common bugs like Salmonella and E. coli. The new study found more than half the samples containing Staphylococcus aureus, a bacteria that can make people sick, and half those contaminated samples had a form of staph that's resistant to at least three kinds of antibiotics. Quote, this study shows that much of our meat and poultry is contaminated with multidrug-resistant staph. Now we need to determine what this means in terms of the risk to the consumer. Well, I'll tell you what it means. It means that there are tens of millions of cases of food poisoning each year in the United States. Many people will undercook meat, but when you overcook the meat, you also create a cancer-causing chemical called heterocyclic amines. And it also doesn't ask the question, if meat is properly cooked to kill the staph or the E. coli or the salmonella, is it okay to eat? Well, how many times have you gone into a supermarket or a deli or watched a commercial on television where they're putting turkey or a ham on a sandwich? You're not cooking that. It's already been cooked. And that also is contaminated. High degrees of salmonella. And that can kill you. So, you think that if it's already cooked, you can eat it. And people do. People eat bologna. And people eat hot dogs, sometimes without cooking. I don't know anybody that cooks bologna. And you assume that it's already been processed. Bacteria can grow in items that have already been cooked. So why not just give up meat for a week and see how you feel? Now, you might not feel good for the first 2 or 3 days because your body is probably going to go through withdrawal. But then when you start replacing with wholesome grains and beans and nuts and seed dishes and tasty meals, and for that week, why don't you try, if you're the average person, why not try eating out so you don't have to go through the hassle? Just to go to a vegetarian restaurant and see what it's like when they are giving you some really wholesome, tasty meals. If you were to eat healthy, wholesome, delicious vegetarian meals, you'd realize, gee whiz, I don't have to eat this. At a recent health retreat that I sponsored, all the meals were vegan. They were all gourmet. And people come up and say, wow, I never knew that it could taste this good. Well, because they had no experience with it. So give that a consideration. You'll also be doing the animal a service and the environment a service. Now, this is a separate article. This was done at the Cancer Epidemiology Unit at the University of Oxford, Oxford University, from a Dr. Crow and colleagues. Quote, people who consume more fruit and vegetables have a lower risk of dying from ischemic heart disease, the most common form of heart disease. And it means that higher fruit and vegetable intake occurs among people with other healthy eating habits and lifestyles. So generally you won't find someone who smokes or drinks or is sedentary eating a lot of fruits and vegetables. It's generally when someone does take the time to live a more healthy life that they're going to include more healthy items. This was a part of the European Prospective Investigation into Cancer Nutrition, a heart study, and they found that, quote, people who ate at least 8 portions of fruits and vegetables a day had a 22% lower risk of dying from ischemic heart disease than those that consume fewer than 3 portions a day. A portion weighing 80 grams, that's only about 3.5 ounces. That's equal to a small banana or a small carrot. So we're just not eating enough. They looked at 300,000 people in 8 different European countries to come up with this. Now imagine you're one of the people in this audience. You've been listening for a long time, and you've decided from your own research or own life experience, you feel better when you are eating clean food, wholesome food, lots of raw food, lots of juices. Well, you didn't need the science to tell you, but we have thousands of studies now from quality publications that verify that this kind of lifestyle is what we should be doing. You have over 1,000 studies on the Mediterranean diet alone, which emphasizes high levels of fruits and vegetables. But let's say you're one of the people that really put a lot of the fruits and vegetables into your system, either fresh, organic, hopefully, or concentrates or powders. Of course, when you're having the powders, you're getting the highest concentration of the polyphenols and the antioxidants, what makes a fruit and vegetable healing in the first place. Then you're putting yourself really in a healthy place. So now the science is there to back it up. This I read in the Times of India. It was researched at the University of New South Wales. And here's what it says. Some children aged 8 to 12 are losing their taste buds, which is contributing to childhood obesity. Now, Professor David Lang, a neuropsychologist at the University of New South Wales, said, quote, taste disorders could be a contributing factor to the rising epidemic of childhood obesity. And that is tremendous. And it was as high as 10% could not identify either sweet, salty, bitter, sour in their taste. And that's in part because of being unhealthy and having so much high acidic food in their diet. You got to resensitize yourself to what things should taste like. And it made sense because in the United States some years ago, there was a study where a group of school kids were given fresh orange juice. They didn't like it. They weren't going to drink it because it wasn't sweet enough. They had been raised drinking orange drink that had no orange in it except an artificial flavor, but lots of sugar. So we've acclimated, conditioned our taste against that which is natural. So that's one of the reasons that people who eat a steak or a hamburger, you see everything they put on it. You know, they put different sauces on it. You rarely see someone just eating a piece of meat or chicken without it having flavoring. And those are people that if they eat something natural, they're thinking, well, I like my other taste better, because they're not used to natural taste. Some very good news. If you know anyone who has asthma, and that is that the diet change can bring about relief in asthma. Quote, if you or someone you love has had to deal with sneezing, itchy eyes, breathlessness, rashes, and other symptoms this time of year, unbalanced eating habits may be to blame. This is according to a Dr. Fred Apescator. Quote, proper nutrition can make a dramatic difference. With insights into diet that have been compiled over the years, I'm able to rid or reduce many of my patients' use of multi-end medications for asthma and allergy. There's no need for anyone to stay indoors or feel miserable for an entire season due to these conditions. He is suggesting clean diet, vitamin D, which reduces inflammation, vitamin C, that combats asthma sufferers, and allergies, and vitamin A that can rid the body of mucus, vitamin B12 that stabilizes the imbalance in bacteria that occurs in the gut with most allergy sufferers. So, quercetin is also nature's best antihistamine, and magnesium helps the body dispose of the toxins we consume daily that cause breathing to be a difficulty. Older people suffer from cluttered memory. This is from Concordia University and suggests that older individuals have reduced learning and memory because their minds tend to be cluttered with irrelevant information when performing tasks. Now, these findings offer new insight into why aging is associated with decline in memory and may lead to practical solutions. So what are the practical solutions? Mindfulness. Mindfulness means that whatever you're doing, just keep bringing your thoughts back to what you're doing in that moment. Let me give you an example of that. I can remember years ago doing a retreat upstate at the Fertile Earth Farm. That was the first farm that I had ever owned. That was all I could afford. It was up in Stone Ridge near New Paltz. And it was 50 acres. And I would take people on a nature walk on their first day there in the weekend, which was Friday evening, and we would go for a before sunset walk. And at the end of the walk, which would take about a half hour, I asked him, who saw something that was unique? No one saw anything. I said, well, that's because you were all chatting. I said, now let's go back in total silence, do the same walk, but this time, just keep bringing yourself back to being in the moment, fully conscious of the moment. And suddenly they saw the eagles that had nested there. They saw a family of four deer. They saw beavers at the end of the lake. They heard birds that they hadn't seen. All that they had missed the first time. That's what happens when you distract yourself. So by minimizing distraction and keeping your mind mindful, that helps you, especially if you're over the age of 40, in the tasks at hand. And those who live a healthier life, according to the peer-reviewed journal Cancer Biomarkers, Epidemiology, and Prevention, can substantially reduce your risk of dying of cancer from all causes. They examined 111,966 non-smoking men and women enrolled in the cancer prevention study, nutrition cohort, and diet and lifestyle questionnaire from one group, and 10,000 people were in the group. And what they did, they found that there was as much as a 48% lower risk of cardiovascular death and 58% lower risk of cancer death, 48% cardiovascular death by healthier lifestyle. So that makes a big difference. From our environmental segment today, two stories. This is a good one from Ryan Whitwan of Extreme Tech. Quote, solar panels suffer from two fundamental problems that have continued to persist even after decades of research. They're not very efficient. They cost a lot to produce. At least one of these problems have to be solved before solar power can overtake cheap energy sources like fossil fuels, and some scientists have had their hopes pinned on a common mineral. This mineral, this perovskite, P-E-R-O-V-S-K-I-T-E, it's an organomineral with a peculiar light-absorbing properties, and that's the key. It absorbs light. And a team of researchers, University of Sheffield in England, figured out how to create high-efficiency solar cells with a spray-painting process. Yes, you heard me right. Spray-on solar panels might actually happen. See, this mineral is a crystalline organomineral made mostly of calcium titanate and is found in deposits all over the world. It was first discovered 150 years ago, but only recently have scientists started investigating its use as a solar panel semiconductor replacement for silicon. It certainly makes sense if we can work out the limitations. It's very cheap, easily to obtain, processes better than silicon, and the light-absorbing layer can be incredibly thin, just 1 micrometer at minimum. Now, why is that important? Because right now, silicon has to be at 180 micrometers. This is 1 micrometer. 1 for this, 180 micrometers for silicon. That's why the spray-on solar panel tech demonstrated by the University of Sheffield is plausible as a real-world solution. So I'll keep you up to date on this, and as this starts to evolve, and when it becomes available, I'll let you know. We have a lot of people right now listening from California. Probably the vast majority of them, since I've been on public television stations throughout the state for a long time, and my 31 years on KPFK, one of the sister stations that carried this program. I was on 6 hours every Wednesday from midnight to 6 a.m. for 31 years. I voluntarily left the station because I no longer could support its direction, its management, or its politic or quality of programming. And, you know, they've gone on fine without me, and as I hope they would, except their fund drive is about half what it was, but they can survive. But we have a lot of people who immediately tuned over to a progressive radio network, listening on the internet or by phone. And they're in a severe drought out there. And I get a lot of emails from my office in New York saying, is this going to get better? Will the rains come? Will the aquifers refill? And the answer is no. It's not going to get better. You're in a long-term drought. What do I see? I see that over the next 10 years, you will probably have 50% of the people living in your major cities who are going to be paying an enormous amount for water, that which is available. The state will have to start implementing a salinization water treatment down the entire length of the state. This is going to cost at least $50 to $100 billion. And that probably one-third of all the people, unless you're a mega farmer, are going to have to give up farming because you won't have water for your crops, and smaller communities will be without water entirely. Now, if you're up in the Napa Valley and you have, you know, $10, $20, $30 million, then you could afford to go ahead and put $100,000, $200,000 into drilling a very deep well, and you'll be fine. But for at least one-third of the population of California, you either have to relocate another state or you're going to be suffering. This is the latest from Veronica Rocha, the Los Angeles Times. Quote, severe drought covers nearly 99.8% of California. Drought conditions may have leveled off across California, but nearly 100% of the state remains in a third hardest category for dryness. For the past 2 weeks, California's drought picture has remained the same, halting a steady march towards worse. But the breather has allowed the state to recover only ever so slightly. In May, 100% of California was experiencing severe drought, the third harshest on a 5-level scale. But since things have leveled off, that figure has only improved 99.8%, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor report. Meanwhile, nearly 82% of California continues to suffer extreme drought, and within that area, more than half the state is under the driest exceptional drought category. The figures come from the State Water Resource Control Board, authorized strict fines for water wasters in July as part of the latest conservation effort. As cities across California start enforcing penalties with renewed gusto for overwatering, residents have felt the consequences. Some including huge fines, others annoyed with browning neighborhood lawns. In Santa Cruz, residents who incur penalties can even attend one-time classes instead of paying fees, the water equivalent of a traffic school. As images of dry lake beds and muddy streams continue to proliferate, forecasters warn hope for relief has dimmed somewhat. So, my suggestion, find a more sustainable place in the future to live. Now, you don't have to go running out tomorrow to do it. I believe in doing things mindfully, which means you take your time, you look at what you want to achieve, where you want to be, what you want to do when you get there, and then ask yourself, what tools do I need right now that I don't have for this transition? And then begin the process of taking classes, joining groups, networking, so that when you make your transition, you make it with as little shock and pain as possible. And sometimes you can make it where everything's positive. You meet more progressive people in other parts of America. You develop skills you never knew you had. You begin to see that there are other things in life you can do. You get out of the mindset that everything has to be more, when in point of fact, one can do a lot more with less. But I would definitely start, if you live in the following areas, to relocate. And do it over the next, let's say, 2 to 3 years. California, unless you're in the very northern part of California. The further south you are, the worse it's going to be, and the sooner you're going to affect it. All of Nevada, all of Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Kansas, and all of Texas except the Northeast Corridor. So those are the areas that are just going to be dry as a bone, and the people who will not be affected are the wealthiest because they can afford to dig their own wells. In my home, I've dug my own wells. I don't use city water and haven't in 19 years of living in my home. I have a ranch I live on. I have solar, 100% solar power. I have backup power with propane. So that in a garden. Now, people thought that was eccentric when I was doing it, and I simply said, no, I'm just doing it because it's less polluting, it's more sustainable, and if there is no disaster in the future, good. But if there is, then I'm not going to be affected the same as others would be, and that's exactly the case. So the wealthy, the governmental agencies, the powerful, they will not be affected because there will always be resources. Remember, there's always going to be oil. We've hit peak oil. But for people who cannot afford at some point in the future the high cost of items made with petroleum products or the high cost of gasoline, where you would never be able to reasonably afford driving from New York to Los Angeles, because at some point, especially if there's a war in the Middle East, let's say in Iran, the cost of oil is going to double. And that means the cost of gasoline will double. So where before you could have taken your family and taken a road trip, now you'll have to think twice. The cost of all items transported by truck, by plane, will increase substantially when there is a reduction. But it won't matter to those. Remember, in the United States right today, we have 8 million millionaires. Put another way, if you took every single person living in Manhattan and you took them out of their apartments, you would have a millionaire to fill those apartments and have enough left over to fill Harlem, every apartment in Harlem. That's how many wealthy people there are. Now, those are the very wealthy. That means they have $1 million net minus their property. So you exclude your property from that. So you get a lot of wealthy people. Then you've got 40 million who are not millionaires, but they have between $500,000 to $1 million in asset, or over $1 million if you include their property. They live in gated communities. They can handle this. My concern is for the 260 to 70 million Americans who aren't in that financial position. And that's why I'm suggesting move to a better location while you can and consider all the locations. I have an article on my website that shows you the best places to live. By the way, before any of you have children, plan children in the future, here's the latest figures. This is a major report and should get our attention. It says the following: the average cost of raising a child, $245,000. Quote from CNN Money, Melanie Hicken: new parents, be warned, it could cost nearly $250,000 to raise your child. And that's not even including the cost of college. That's just the cost of raising them. How's that possible? $107,960 housing and transportation. Child care and education up to college, $44,400. Food, $39,060. Clothing, miscellaneous, $33,780. And health care, $20,100. Wow. So, lots of costs. And so a lot of people should consider that. That's a reality. I'm sure many of you have been watching what is occurring with the militarization of our police. Until this incident, this recent incident with Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and we don't have all the facts yet, so I've made no judgment on it until I know all the facts. All I know is that there is an 18-year-old African-American who is dead, but the circumstances leading up to it and what actually happened, we will find out when the results are in, providing it's an impartial, honest investigation. Many people are saying that this is what is going to be happening. This is the pushback. It is not. This doesn't even register in my mind a 1 on a scale of 1 to 100 in the pushback. Take a very careful look at what you're seeing. You're seeing principally African Americans, many from the community, which is over 50% African American, many coming from outside, and it's mainly racial. The big pushback, and I absolutely see this coming, and this will not be peaceful, is when an incident occurs where there is a white working class person that about 50 million white middle class people armed see, and then it won't be Ferguson. There won't be demonstrations and peaceful comments. You're going to just have one very terrible incident. They'll be put down, they'll be shot and killed and arrested, and then every time they do it, more are going to come out. So, but this is merely giving us an idea of what is potential as far as how the government's going to respond. So the recent killing of this unarmed 18-year-old African-American by a white police officer has made a visible sign of how a racist, military, metaphysics, dominant America responds. His subsequent demonization by the media only confirms its entrance into the public consciousness as a form of vicious entertainment. The police have been turned into soldiers who view the neighborhood in which they operate as war zones. Outfitted with full riot gear, you've seen it, submachine guns, armored vehicles, and other lethal weapons imported from the battlefields of Iraq and Afghanistan. Their mission is to assume battle-ready behavior. Is it any wonder that violence, rather than painstaking neighborhood police work and community outreach and engagement, becomes the norm for dealing with the alleged criminals, especially at a time when more and more behaviors are being criminalized? What I want to introduce is a caveat. I think it is a mistake to simply focus on the militarization of the police and their racist actions in addressing the killing of Michael Brown. What we are witnessing in this killing and mobilization of state violence is symptomatic of the neoliberal, racist, punishing state emerging all over the world with its encroachment of a machinery of social death. The neoliberal killing machine is on the march globally. You name the continent, I'll give you the specifics. When did we see the innocent people being killed in the Ukraine? When has the American media showed you the innocent men, women, and children killed in Gaza, in the Congo, in South Sudan, by the paramilitary death squads in Colombia, Nicaragua, Venezuela? The spectacle of neoliberal misery is too great to deny anymore, and the only mode of control left by corporate-controlled societies is violence. But a violence that is waged against the most disposable, such as immigrant children, protesting youth, the unemployed, the new black youth. Neoliberal states can no longer justify and legitimate their exercise of ruthless power and its effects upon casino capitalism. Given the fact that corporate power now floats above and beyond national boundaries, the financial elite can dispense with political concessions in order to pursue their toxic agendas. In the face of massive inequality, increasing poverty, the rise of the punishing state, and the attack on all public spheres, neoliberalism can no longer pass itself off as synonymous with democracy. They are completely divorced. The capitalist elite, whether they are hedge fund managers, and where do you think the hedge fund managers get their money? Over 70% of all the money in hedge funds comes from pension, teachers' pensions, police officers' pensions, state workers' pensions. Are they even aware of it? And if they were aware, do they care? You have the new billionaires of Silicon Valley, or the heads of banks and corporations. Do you think that Bank America today cares that it has to pay a $17 billion fine? They are dancing in their offices because they managed to collect over $3 trillion in the last decade in mortgages, the vast majority of which should never have been given. Now, I do not blame the banks alone for this, because people who lied to get something they could not afford are equally responsible. That's why I've said repeatedly we do not have a 1%, 99%. We have 100% of people all doing something that is complicit with someone who is then perceived as taking advantage of us. If I choose to shop in a Walmart, I should not then protest that they are paying their help so little that they are living in debt servitude. I should not then be concerned when I get poisoned by something from China if I did not first choose to eat something that was grown in America under healthier conditions. I cannot complain to my doctor for giving me a worthless chemotherapy when I chose not to look for any other form of healing option. I can excuse it, but I'm still responsible at some level for it. The 99.1% immediately absolves the 99% for any responsibility for anything they do. Their obese children, their obesity, banking in the big corporate banks, shopping in the big box stores, letting their neighborhoods be taken over and mallized, where a Gap or a Duane Reade are on every block and a bank on every block. What happened to the people that were on that were small business people? We don't know. Did you support them? Well, no. Then don't complain. You participated in that exchange. When you saw that the Defense Authorization Act and the Patriot Act and the spying was endemic and was counter constitutional rights and liberties, did you protest? No. Did you show concern? No. Did you vote Democrat or Republican? Yes. Did you even care about who the independent candidates were? No. When you knew there were independent candidates like Jill Stein, Rocky Anderson, the last election, or Gary Johnson, did you even know what their platforms were? No. When you have a Randy Credico, a lifelong conscientious liberal, a true liberal, not a faux liberal like you find on the Clintons and Obama and MSNBC, did you care he was running against a corporate governor? No. Would you have voted with him if he showed you he could turn everything around? No. Did you care that your media that you were watching was biased? No. Did you care about the food you were eating were genetically engineered? No. Did you care about the curriculum in your schools have been distorted for passing tests but not creating dynamic educational standards to help the child? No. Did you care about when 95% of all the stop and searches in New York a half million year were on Black and Latinos? No. Would you have cared if you were the one who had your head slammed into a sidewalk for no reason and the only charge you had was resisting arrest? But what were you arrested for? Nothing. So your charge was you had not committed a crime. That's correct. Your crime was you resisted arrest by saying, why am I being arrested? So the irony of it is they didn't have to actually show that you had done anything wrong to be arrested. It's just that if you objected to being arrested for something you had not done wrong, then the court would always side with you. That's right. Is the complete judiciary in America corrupt? 100%. Is the Supreme Court a bunch of idiots? You bet. Are corporations people? Only if you're a moron. Should corporate charters be revoked? Yes. Should anyone in a corporation committing a crime go to prison for life? Yes. Would that stop these people? You bet. Will that happen? Not in anyone's life. Will anything be reformed? It can't be. Is there any system anywhere, any paradigm that can be changed? Impossible. Then what is the outlook? You're seeing it now. The entire American media are working on behalf of the special interest groups, the lobbyists, the institutions, the think tanks, the universities, the tenured professors, cowards, with rare exception. So then you understand how we ended up with the militarization of racism and neoliberal violence that Professor Henry Giroux speaks so eloquently about. Neoliberal capitalism is not representative of anything of true ethical democracy. When justice has been subordinated to the violence of unreason, to a market logic that divorces itself from social cost, and a ruling elite that has an allegiance to nothing but profit, and when you don't have thinking people within the militarized police, you have drones. Do you really think that anything you say or do will cause a person to regain a sense of consciousness and spiritual awareness? This is why I think it is dreadfully wrong to talk just about the militarization of local police forces without recognizing that the metaphor of war zone is apt for global politics in which the social state and public spheres have been replaced by the machinery of finance, the militarization of entire societies, not just the police, and the widespread use of punishing people, anyone, that challenges from a legitimate stand the excesses of power. So their punishment will go to prisons. There's no reform, just profit. To the schools, there's no real education, just indoctrination. To the streets, stand up, show us your pockets, show us your coat, if you're Black or Latino. Some have rightly argued that these tactics have been going on in the Black community for a long time and are not new. Police violence certainly has been going on for some time, but what is new is that the intensity of violence and the level of military-style machinery of death being employed is much more sophisticated and deadly. Kevin Zeese and Dr. Margaret Flowers point out the militarization of the police in the United States is a recent phenomenon that dates back to 1971. They write, quote, "The militarization of police is a more recent phenomenon and marks a rapid rise of police paramilitary units, SWAT teams, which are modeled after special operation teams in the military. They did not exist before 1971 when Los Angeles, under the leadership of the infamous police chief Daryl Gates, formed the first one and used it for demolishing homes with tanks equipped with battering rams. By 2000, there were 30,000 police SWAT teams, and by the late 1990s, 89% of police departments in cities over 50,000 had almost doubled the amount that they had. Now there are over 50,000 arrests or SWAT raids. SWAT teams were active with 45,000 deployments in 2007 compared to 3,000 in the 80s. Now, at the same time, the impact of rapid militarization of local police forces on black poor communities is nothing short of terrifying and symptomatic of the violence that takes place in advanced genocidal states. For instance, according to a recent report entitled Operation Ghetto Storm, produced by the Malcolm X grassroots movement, quote, police officers, security guards, or self-appointed vigilantes, extrajudicial killed at least 313 African Americans last year. This means a black person was killed by a security officer every 28 hours. In conclusion, the emergence of a warrior cop and the surveillance state go hand in hand and are indicative not only of the state-sanctioned racism, but also the rise of an authoritarian society and the dismantling of all of our civil liberties. Brutality mixed with attacks on freedom of dissent and peaceful protests harbors memories of past brutal regimes such as the dictatorships in Latin America in the 1970s and 80s. The events in Ferguson speak to a history of representation in both the United States and abroad that Americans have chosen to forget at their risk. In spite of his generally right-wing political views, Rand Paul got it right in arguing that, quote, when you couple this militarization of law enforcement with an erosion of civil liberties and due process that allows the police to become judge and jury, national security letters, no-knock searches, broad general warrants, pre-conviction forfeiture, we began to have a very serious problem on our hands. On that, I would agree. From Professor Henry Giroux. Back in a moment with my guest, please stay with us. Everyone, in a moment, we're going to have a newsmaker update with Dr. Brian Hooker on the cover-up at the CDC of the MMR vaccine autism relationship among African-American boys. But first, for those of you who understand that the Progressive Radio Network, which, by the way, is the number one internet radio network in the world, we are offering a special today. All the funds go to this network. The End of Summer Beauty Package. It's the Ageless Answer Foaming Skin Cleanser and the Ageless Answer Skin Serum. They're both together only $39.99. That's normally $67. So you have a big savings. And the Foaming Skin Cleanser, which I take with me everywhere, it's a deep cleansing, nourishing, revitalizing soap. It's a big size, 7.5 ounces. And it has the berry extract, coconut, amino acids. It leaves your skin feeling soft, conditioned, and toned. It's very hydrating. Includes a mild beta hydroxy acid derived from willow bark to help rid the skin of unwanted surface cells that can clog your pores and cause blemishes. Use it in the morning and the evening to prepare your skin for the very important other product, which is the skin serum. You use that also after you clean it. And that has the whole leaf aloe vera concentrate with all the unique combinations from oat, beta-glucan, and tissue respiratory factor, and more. All the vitamins, minerals, and herbs that your skin really benefits from. So that is our special today. You're getting the Foaming Skin Cleanser to clean your face and your body, and the Ageless Answer Skin Serum. The antioxidant-rich, moisturizing, rejuvenating treatment for your skin. Put it on where you have bad skin. Neck, around the face, back of the hands, elbows, knees, feet. You really see a big difference. So that's it, and I'm going to give you a number to call, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 627-5065, 877-627-5065 to get it. Let's say hello to Dr. Brian Hooker. I gave you his background earlier, associate professor of biology at Simpson University in California, and also a bioengineer, 16 years as a team leader for the Department of Energy's Genomes to Life Center for Molecular and Cellular Systems at its Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, where he investigated gene-protein networks, cell signaling, and cellular metabolic pathways. He is a prominent leader in the autism movement, and Brian has a 16-year-old son with autism and has been active in autism community. His website is focusautism.org. Nice to have you with us today, Brian.
Thank you, Dr. Nall. It's it's an honor to be on your show again. I really appreciate it.
Across the anti-vaccine community now is the recent news of an anonymous whistleblower from the CDC who reached out to you, no one else, and came forth with information about CDC's cover-up and scientific fraud to mask a vaccine-autism relationship. And as I understand it, he has provided you with tens of thousands of pages of documents. So you're just at the starting point of reviewing that database, though I also understand that you've made arrangements to make sure that you're not raided and have all that stolen, so other people also will have the capacity, like WikiLeaks, to keep it from falling into the hands of the government. Tell us about the research. Tell us about the African-American boys. There are over 300% increase in autism-related spectrum disorder conditions if they have that vaccine, the MMR vaccine, prior to the age of 36 months versus after 36 months.
That is correct. The whistleblower actually contacted me back in November of 2013. And one of the things that I had wanted to do even prior to talking to this particular individual was to reanalyze the data for a CDC paper by DiStefano et al. That had come out in 2014. And this particular paper claimed that there was no relationship between the timing of the first MMR vaccine, when children received their first MMR vaccine, versus the risk of autism. And so I was able, I actually legally obtained this data. This was not, I went through the front door of the CDC to get this data. I entered into a data public use agreement with the CDC and then analyzed the data. And very, very quickly, the relationship came out that African-American males were 3.4 times higher risk of receiving an autism diagnosis if they got the MMR vaccine on time versus after 36 months. Now, the CDC knew about this relationship, and I do have documentation that has been provided to me that the CDC knew about this relationship as early as November 7th, 2001. That's as early as I can find it. They chose to cover up this particular relationship using a duplicitous statistical technique. They decided that with the African Americans, if they did not have a valid state of Georgia birth certificate, they were not going to consider them for the study. But oddly, they didn't do that for the white population. They only did that for the African-American population. And you cannot do that in statistics. And according to the whistleblower, it was a concerted effort to cover up this relationship.
Explain how they covered it up, who was involved, how long did they cover it up, and are you sure that they knew that this was going to be covered up? In other words, was this something they could have done by accident, just overlook it, or was there some malice aforethought? Because if there was malice aforethought and they covered it up, then they're not immune from criminal prosecution or class action lawsuit.
That is correct. And based on the whistleblower's account, as well as the data that were at hand to me, there was malice and aforethought. These individuals knew, and it included, the paper includes three senior CDC officials, Dr. Colleen Boyle, who is now the director of the National Center for Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities, Dr. Marsha Lynn Jürgen-Alsop, who is the head of the Developmental Disabilities Branch within that center, and Dr. Frank DiStefano, who's the head of the Vaccine Safety Office for the CDC. So these are senior officials who colluded directly in order to come up with this particular, this particular relationship. Statistically, there is no way that you would apply one method to one particular population, the African Americans, and they would not do that across the board. They did not do that. And if you look in the particular paper, the DiStefano paper, they put this birth certificate requirement on the African American cohort, and that made the size of the African American population considered in the study, that made the size too small to achieve statistical significance. Okay, and the relationship was abolished, even though in my analysis, and what I did was repeat what the CDC did in the background. All I did was use their exact same methodology. I got the same results that they did in the background, and in the foreground, they chose not to show it. And now here in 2014, this is the first that it's been elucidated, 13 years later.
What happens when you bring your attention to the CDC of what you have determined and ask them to see if your research is correct, if your figures are correct? Are they going to correct their former position?
I would certainly hope so. I have reached out directly to the director of CDC, Dr. Thomas Frieden, and would invite a frank conversation. I mean, the issue with the MMR vaccine and the duplicitous response of the CDC in this paper, to me, is just the tip of the iceberg. As you said, I have tens of thousands of papers to go through yet that also implicate faulty and fraudulent statistics around thimerosal in vaccines. And, there are many, many other issues to be considered. CDC has not directly reached out to me, and I certainly hope that they do so. I'm not really going to hold my breath.
I would move forward with a class action lawsuit and criminal investigations. I'd ask for a special prosecutor. I would go to the CDC. All agencies of government have special inspector generals. And recently it was shown that 70% of the inspector generals joined together, the first time they've ever done this, saying that the agencies that they were there to inspect were not cooperating. They were withholding information, obstructing investigations. This is serious because you're looking at all the parents whose kids may have been damaged, not just with autism, but other conditions with the MMR vaccine. You're looking at Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who was excoriated because he challenged, along with a group of other scientists, that the MMR vaccine, the measles component of the MMR vaccine, could have caused intestinal problems in some children who suffer from autism in England a long time ago. And they went after him with a passion. Now you have the evidence. They knew this was harmful. So if it's harmful in an African-American at a high statistical relevance, why couldn't it be also harmful in a Caucasian child and equally susceptible, in which case it means the entire vaccine should be banned, and it means that all those children and their parents should be notified that they were given a bad vaccine, the government knew it, and covered it up. Your final thoughts?
All these issues need to be raised, and because this was such a collusion to cover up, I believe that a grand jury investigation, a federal investigation, the Office of the Inspector General, everything that you've said, I agree with wholeheartedly, and I do appreciate you saying that. I appreciate so much what you're doing in terms of getting the word out, and all I can say is stay tuned because there is more that is going to come out.
The Julian Assange in America, Dr. Brian Hooker. Thank you, Brian, for being there. My suggestion is there's a large group of attorneys that we are in contact with who are more than capable of taking on the government, have and have won, as well as whistleblowers. And I hope that the whistleblower at the CDC is in the protective hands of a whistleblowing association, legal whistleblowing association, so that when they try to go after him, as every agency has gone after, especially this administration, they won't be able to do it so easily.
Absolutely, and I can affirm that that our individual has taken steps towards that.
Good. Dr. Brian Hooker, with CDC covering up the MMR vaccine, the autism relationship, especially among African and boys, but that also means it could be among all boys. That research is out there. Now we have to look at the 100,000 pages of documents. What else is coming? He's saying a lot more is to come. We'll share it with you. All the best to you. I'm Gary Nall, and we're out of time. Thank you very much for sharing your hour with us, and I'll share more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone. Let's say hello to Utrecht Lead. Hi, Utrecht.
Hello, Gary. Today we are in for a checkup, a political consciousness checkup, asking, in light of recent events, how's your political consciousness?
Well, 43% of the American population say that their consciousness is with. They've withdrawn it from the official corporate Democrat and Republican parties, so they're paying attention. And by the way, Utrecht, I was just sent the latest for Progressive Radio Network, just so people understand how many people are tuning in each week to listen to you and other people on the air. These are the latest statistics. We had over 10 million page views last week alone, and we had, that's just 1 week, I might mention, we had 333,130 interreactions, incoming messages, and we had 6,003 unique users, meaning first time ever, and 10,207,537 people viewing. So you're being heard.
Thanks a lot. That's good to know.
Have a good show. Utrecht Lead right now.